The title of this talk is A Bold Proposal, and at first glance, just looking at it, it's not so much like bold, it's like several stops past barking. It's and what do you make of it? Would you advise your daughter or your sister to take this form of action to propose? Bear in mind that we know that Boaz is a good guy, he's a good old guy. Bear in mind as well he's been working his socks off for 4 or 5 weeks, getting the harvest in, been a bit stressed I expect. Finally the harvest is all done, he's had a big knees up with all his labourers, he's had a few drinks, he's settled down, and is this a good time for an attractive young woman to disturb him? Probably not. Well, with apologies to all you romantics out there, this story is not really or mainly about the marriage proposal. There's a much bigger game afoot in this story. But we tend to see it as a proposal because we live in a society that's sort of obsessed by, you know, the significant other in your life and various forms of coupledom. And actually, of course, there's never been a better time to be single, is there, really? I saw my cousin Jan in Bristol last week. She's 70, and she worked as a maternity section as a young woman, and then as a intensive care nurse, and then as a counsellor. And for her 70th birthday, she had several parties and 8 cakes. She said to us, "You're welcome to come and see me, but don't bring a cake," she said. "And if when I'm 70, I have 8 cakes, I think I'm very lucky." So there's more ways of living it than being married, although it's much harder in these days, of course. And a lot of people think Naomi is incredibly reckless, putting Ruth into this situation. I mean, who knows what would happen? But I want to make the case for Naomi this morning, and I want to argue that she knew what she was about and thought she had a good chance of succeeding here. First, there were some cultural reasons, some legal reasons. Boaz was a relative of Elimelech's. Elimelech, we didn't mention him, did we? He was Naomi's husband, and he died in Moab. And Boaz is called in chapter 2:20. We heard it at the end of last week. He's a redeemer. Now, God's law said that if you married into a family and the husband died and you were widowed, another man in that family, usually the man's brother, would marry you. And it was a way of providing for widows in a culture where being outside of family was very difficult. It might also be a way of stopping attractive young widows from distracting all the men, I don't know. But the twist in this story is, if you married this widow, the first son you had isn't your son. The first son you have belongs to the man she married first of all. That's a bit complicated, isn't it? Ruth had originally married a man called Mahlon. If she gets to marry Boaz, and they have a son, that son is Mahlon's son. Mahlon's grave may be in Moab, but in Israel he's alive. Because God doesn't really do death, not the way that other people do. So, it's more than just a husband Ruth's looking for. She's looking for a son from Mahlon, and technically Mahlon could well inherit whatever had been Mahlon's father's, Elimelech's. Another part of a redeemer's duty, and Boaz was in this relationship with Elimelech, was to redeem or buy back any land of any relative who'd fallen into poverty. So if Elimelech, that's a good word to say, isn't it? Practice that. If Elimelech had property in Bethlehem years ago, then it was Boaz's job to go after that property and see if he could redeem it and re-establish Elimelech's family. So Naomi and Ruth aren't just looking for a husband. And in fact, you know, husbands are 3 a penny. There was a queue. Some of the men in that queue were young men and some were wealthy. If you had an expanding farm in Bethlehem and there was a woman of childbearing age who could work hard and was honourable, you know, she would be a bride worth winning. And Ruth was. But if she married Joe Bloggs, she would only ever be Mrs. Joe Bloggs. There might, if she was lucky, be a place by the fire for Naomi, but that's it. But they want more than that. Ruth and Naomi want much more. They want the restoration of their family and the memories of Elimelech and Mahlon. And they have a legal reason for thinking that Boaz might go for this. They have a second reason. Besides all this legal stuff, they know that Boaz is a godly man. They know that because he tries to imitate God in what he does. On his land, poor people are welcome to glean for grain. On his land, a young woman with no protector can work safely, and that's unusual in that culture. And he's always praying for people. Have you noticed that? In chapter 2, He walks up to his labourers. "The Lord be with you," he says. And then later on, when he meets Ruth, "The Lord bless you," he says. He's a godly man. And that's another reason why they might trust him. He's also a kind man. He's been really kind to Ruth and Naomi. We heard that last week. In fact, if you're suspicious, you might think he'd been exceptionally kind to Ruth. So the big question is, how will he respond when he wakes up with cold feet? That's odd, he thinks. You don't get to my age without knowing how to put a blanket around your feet. So he bends forward to sort the blankets out, and there's a woman there. And she looks and smells lovely. And Naomi had said to Ruth that Boaz would tell her what to do. Well, Boaz doesn't say that at all. Boaz says what Uriah would say. He would say, "Who are you?" And her reply is slightly flowery and delicate, but it's to the point. And translated into our modern language, it would just say, "I'm Ruth, the servant gleaning in your fields. You have an obligation to my family, so marry me." This is a big shock for a guy who's just been woken up, I think, after a good night out. And furthermore, Boaz is like a big cheese in Bethlehem. He's wealthy, perhaps the wealthiest man there. He's older. He's a real Israelite. He can trace his family back to time of slavery before Egypt. He's got a pedigree. And she, well, she's a foreigner, for a start. She's a Moabite. Now, I'm going to be like Chris, I shan't mention Portsmouth. But she comes from a place the Israelites didn't think much of. She's a Moabite. She's a widow. She's poor. She might have ideas above her station. And above all, in this shockingly patriarchal society, she's a she. And he could be deeply offended and say, "Get out of here. Who do you think you are?" And humiliate her. Or worse, he could take advantage of her, ruin her reputation, and set her on a downward path. So Naomi is taking a risk. So let's see what Boaz actually says when he finally wakes up. And he's actually quite quick off the ball. He says, this is Boaz, isn't it? "May you be blessed by the Lord." Praying again. "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter," in verse 10. "You have made this last kindness greater than the first, and you've not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." So already he's reassured her. He wants God to bless her. He sees her like any father would see his favorite daughter. He wants her cared for. He acknowledges that she could have married any of the young rich guys in town, but she's come to him because he's a redeemer. Just staying with Naomi and coming back with Naomi from Moab was a great kindness. And this is an even greater kindness. And he's really impressed. "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask. For my fellow townsmen know you are a worthy woman. And it's true that I'm a redeemer." There's a slight catch here. "Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, then do it. But if he's not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down till morning." So he prays for her that she will be blessed. He calls her his daughter. He only wants what's good for her. He praises her for her generosity in the way she's conducting herself. And he calls her worthy, saying people in this town know you are worthy. And he says he'll do all she asks. Of course he will, like a brother would do it for a favorite sister. And then he gives her a present of food for Naomi. He gives her 6 measures of barley. Let's see. "He laid his feet till morning. Then bring the garment you're wearing and hold it out." She held it. He measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. And she went back to Bethlehem. And he's been careful to get her away before it's too light and before people recognize her, because he cares for her reputation as well. He doesn't want people to know that she's been lying down in a threshing floor with him or anybody else. The only fly in the ointment is that there's somebody else around who reckons they've got a better claim on this lady. And it's typical of Boaz, he doesn't look for a shortcut or dodge the issue or attempt to nail a deal down quietly behind closed doors. He's going to deal with this in the morning, in daylight, in public. Now, we'll have to wait till next week to see if Boaz manages to carry this off. Sorry about that. Here's a clue, though. When his servants find out who the new boss's wife is going to be, they will be so glad they were kind to that Moabite girl. Think about it. So she goes away, reassured that Boaz is totally on her side, that he really thinks a lot of her, that he's working for her during the day, and that he will marry her, and he's given her a special gift for Naomi. And she must have had a huge sense of relief and gratitude and confidence that once she was a foreigner in this land and vulnerable and alone and with no future, and now she has a future. Now she has been redeemed, you could say, by this man Boaz. Now, I don't know if you think it's a bit odd that Boaz was so quick off the mark when he finally got awake. He came up with this plan straight away. It all seemed a bit worked out, doesn't it? And I think he'd already worked it out, actually. I think he'd already seen the possibilities, and he'd already thought that if he did marry Ruth, it could be the solution to a lot of problems. It could redeem her and Naomi. But he knows Ruth might have reasonably have had other ideas than marrying him. And given their relative positions in society, if he turned up on the doorstep and proposed marriage, she couldn't really say no. If the richest man in town comes to your door and proposes marriage, and you turn him down, and then you're poor, well, people will say, well, that's your fault. And Boaz is not only a godly man, and a man who does things properly, but he's a real gent, and he won't impose himself on this family. But he respects them. But the most he can do is signal frantically to Naomi that he is a loving man, he is there, but it's their shout. That's what all these gifts are about that he's been sending. So actually, this is not a guide to proposing, and you should not try this at home. Even among consenting adults, you shouldn't try it. This story is not about proposing marriage. This story is about redemption. Now, Boaz models God in all he does. He's a godly man. And the point of this is that the respectful, loving, generous, considerate attitude that Boaz showed to Ruth is the way God feels about you. And we often come in bowed down with guilt or doubt or fear, and we find God hard to get our head around. And to be sure, like the lion in the Narnia books, he's not a tame lion. And Boaz is no pushover either. I mean, you don't get to be the richest man in town by being a soft touch. But like Boaz, he's frantically signaling his love towards you this morning. But it's your choice to lie down at his feet and ask for what you need. And furthermore, to get to where God is, you need to leave Moab. He's not there. Moab's a place we learned in chapter 1 of idols and idolatry, of things which cannot really give you satisfaction and peace. And God is not there. God cannot give us happiness and peace apart from himself, because it is not there. There is no such thing as happiness and peace apart from God. But you have to leave Moab and go to Israel. And I have to leave Moab a lot. I often find myself in Moab, obsessed with things which do not satisfy, which are not good for me, which do not build me up, which do not restore God's image in me, which do not bring me close to God. And I often need to come away from Moab. And secondly, it costs to get you out of Moab. See, Naomi and Ruth are now back in Israel, where God is. But there are three graves in Moab. Three men died so they could do that. Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon, the two sons of Elimelech and Naomi. They left their broken bodies in Moab, and then Naomi and Ruth could come home. And only through the broken body of Jesus and his blood can we get out of Moab and have our debts paid for and find our way back to the presence of God. And I pray if any of you are thinking about God and wondering about this Christianity thing and wondering if he's worth trusting, well, he is worth trusting. He's like Boaz. You can trust him. He's a good God. He only wants the best for you. And if it helps talk to somebody about that, then speak to Dan or myself or the people available to prepare at the end of the service. And don't go away from here unredeemed this morning. I want to share one last good thing with you. The chapter starts with Naomi seeking rest for Ruth. In verse chapter 3, verse 1, shall I not seek rest for you? It may say home. A good translation will say rest, and it should be footnoted rest, because rest is what it is. It's much bigger than a home that Naomi is seeking for Ruth. Naomi is seeking rest for Ruth. Rest from slaving away, trying to restore this family which is so broken. And she can't do it. And at the end of the chapter, it's quite interesting. She gets in, and Naomi says, well, how did it go? I'll bet she did. So she told her all the man had, so Ruth tells Naomi all that man had done for her, saying, the 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back to your empty-handed to your mother-in-law. 6 measures of barley. And Naomi replies, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest. Hallelujah. So Naomi and Ruth start off seeking rest, and now they've got rest. They can stop. And Naomi says, put your feet up, relax, rest. And she's able to say that. Naomi is able to say that because Boaz has told her. And Ruth didn't hear her say it, didn't hear Boaz tell Naomi that. And you might not have done either. It's in those 6 measures of barley. Because Naomi was a good Israelite girl, and she knew that her God made the world in 6 days, and then he rested. And when they came out of slavery in Egypt, he gave them food in the wilderness to gather 6 days a week, and on the 7th day they rested. And here's Naomi, and Boaz has sent her 6 measures of barley. And he's saying to her, you can't do any more. You've done your bit. You've come to me to ask for help. That's all you need to do. I'll do the rest. There's somebody else with a claim on you, but I'll deal with that. I'll deal with them tomorrow. You can rest. And Jesus says, come to me, all who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And sometimes we forget that by our own efforts, we cannot restore the image of God in us. Not by ourselves. We cannot make ourselves better. But God can. It's his gift. He's a redeemer. And it's his work that will change us and you into the wonderful person you will certainly become when God's finished with you and me. It's his gift. He's a redeemer. So don't leave unredeemed this morning. And remember that God called you to rest. He didn't call you to... He's not a God like other gods who makes you work hard all the time. He's a God who works for you. He wants you to rest in him. Don't miss these chances. And thank God that he's a redeemer and that he's lived out that redemption in the story of Ruth and Boaz. I'm going to stop. Time's ticking away. But I know David's going to come and pray for us and lead us in prayer.